You're listening to Safety Corner, powered by TCL and S1, for workers, by workers. Online and in-person health and safety programs and training available in 10-plus languages. Reach out to them at www.mys1.ca and DM them at my_S1 for more information.
Bon dia.
Bon dia. What's going on, Phil?
I know. Another day.
Another day, another Safety Corner show.
Another Safety Corner show.
Another Safety Corner show.
Pew, 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 pew. Like those Portuguese commercials you ever watch when you're a kid? Like
on Omni?
Yeah.
The old Channel school? 4. Pew, pew, pew. Is Omni still around?
I don't know, man.
We're getting old, eh? No more payphones.
I haven't seen a payphone in years.
You know, I saw the dumbest thing yesterday? All the snow's on the roadways in Toronto.
Yeah.
So they wrap plastic garbage bags around all the parking point of sale.
For what? For parking? The parking meters? So what? So they don't get covered in snow? Nobody has an excuse?
No, so you can't use them. But why? I use the app.
Have you tried just not paying for no parking?
No, that's back in the days. You could do that in Photoshop and all this other crap. Yeah, you could do that shit. I've done that before on job sites where you get the temporary ticket, the temporary permit.
I don't know. I'm just asking.
And then all of a sudden the city smarted up, eh? And then they started going digital and then they couldn't because you Photoshop it. This was a nice little racket that I had going on. You Photoshop it and it comes up as if it's valid, but it's not valid. So they can't issue a ticket because they're not exactly sure if it's valid or not valid.
Had some big scams for...
It was for a little while for one particular job, and I was getting tired of getting tickets, so then I would do it, and then all of a sudden they went all digital, and then they were reading them correctly, and then I was like, oh, now I got it. Because I was upset that you could only get a temporary ticket once per week per household that you were working on.
I don't know, man.
Why not just make it for this household, and we all get valid ticket?
All I know is during the last snowstorm, I saw a parking enforcement driving around in my neighborhood, and I'm thinking to myself, who has the courage to give out parking tickets on a day like today?
And they were still doing it.
You know, it's another big scam that really kind of turns my stomach is the handicap parking
passes. You mean the passes that are given out to everybody?
They're giving out to everybody, and then people just photocopy them and put them there and stuff. And
do they actually do that?
Yeah. Just so you can get VIP parking, man. It's
I'd feel bad parking in a handicapped spot, right? If I'm not handicapped.
You ever watch someone pulls up to a handicapped parking spot and they like literally get out and they're...
Like a G-Wagon?
Yeah. Mercedes?
Or fully loaded Tahoe or not something maybe, like that? But they come out and they're walking perfectly fine?
Yeah, perfectly fine. No problem. And they fully took that parking spot and it's kind of... it's one of those things that you just look at and you're like, shake your head. You know what else I shake my head at sometimes? Now that we're talking about it. Parents that ride their bicycle on the road with their baby strapped onto the bike.
I thought in the UK they changed it so then you had to be, you couldn't push a stroller in front of you. You had to pull the stroller behind you.
No, I'm talking about those bicycles
when you cross intersections because people are not paying attention. All of a sudden the stroller gets hit first instead of the person pushing the stroller.
I change the process. Sure.
What I don't like, I got a major beef with, are runners who run on roadways. Not in a straight line.
Just take up the whole road?
Yes.
Yeah, cyclists.
Running towards you in direction. Cyclists
do that too, man.
That's dangerous because if you're not paying attention, that's why the sidewalk's
no,
there.
But
why don't you run on the sidewalk?
Yeah. No, the cyclists.
Oh, you don't want it because it's uneven, right? Like you might hit a pebble or something like that.
I don't know.
A pebble.
It's like the splinters on the guardrails.
A lot better than getting hit by a car.
Right? Like I see like moms or dads riding their bicycle, the kids on the weird, back.
Because what if it just lets go?
It's not even just let's go. You are literally putting yourself in between the sidewalk or parked cars and moving cars. Like, why would you put yourself at that risk? You know, you got like 2 tons of steel on one side, 2 tons of steel on the other side, and you're riding through this little narrow thing with a helmet on, which is important, I guess, and your baby on the back. Like, it makes no sense. If I had a baby on a bicycle, I would never ride on the road. I would be on the sidewalk at all times.
But in my opinion, I've always shared it, is that our bike lanes should be on sidewalks. That's how they do it in Japan.
That would make the most sense, especially when we only use the bike lanes 6 months out of the year here.
But yet, they were the first to get plowed in the recent storm.
But aren't they getting
removed?
The
bike lanes were getting plowed first.
Yeah, I guess you want
to ride. How many bicyclists did you see on the roadway during the storm?
Well, Uber drivers count?
No. They're not bicyclists.
Cyclists,
whatever. They're not cyclists. They're not cyclists.
I don't know.
Well, but those I found it stupid too. That they're shoveling, they're plowing the bike lane before the roadways.
And my neighborhood doesn't have bike lanes and the roads were nice and plowed. And shout out to all the people that, all the workers that were plowing and up all night. And
so why is it that Toronto had those really fancy plows with the articulating arm to clear the driveway? Nice.
Did you see that?
Yeah, but no other city has them.
Why because doesn't Toronto can afford them? Didn't they just raise the property tax again?
Oh, ciao. Hey. All right, we got to get off of that.
What are we at? 12% right now in the last 2 years? Amazing.
Increase in taxes?
Yeah.
She's done?
I think so.
I think
it was the first year was 9 and then the next year was 16 or 6 or something. I don't know.
When she had a campaign that said that she was never going to raise taxes. Dude,
the reality is everyone is bankrupt. The city is bankrupt. The province is bankrupt.
Paying the people that are not doing the work money.
Can we say Doge again? Come on.
We need that, but nobody up here in Canada is talking about that.
No, they're starting to talk about it.
No, the global affairs is still shredding.
Did you see that? That was insane. Oh, let's take a look at what we spend our money on. Shredding. The website is down.
They're still shredding, man. We've got enough for everybody's Christmas for like the next 20 years. Packing material for all their gifts with all the shredding.
That's a lot of shredding, man.
But what are we talking about today?
I don't know. Like, there's an election coming up. Before we jump into this, I don't know if the election is, by the time we air this podcast, if it's happened already or not.
When is the election? March 25th?
No, it's in February.
February?
Yeah, man. Trump is coming, so they have to call the election early.
I don't pay attention because it's predetermined. I vote, but it's predetermined.
Hey, and by the way, for everyone out there, your employer, you are entitled to 3 hours paid to go vote. So make sure that you go and vote.
It's the younger ones that I have a problem with because they generally don't go.
No, that's not necessarily true. You think
so? The last federal. Any young person below the age, I would say, of 30 did not vote that I knew.
I don't know.
I voted the last four.
But honestly, this election for me, casting my vote is going to be a really difficult one.
For the provincial?
Yeah.
Really?
I don't like any of them.
So then who do you vote for?
Right. You can burn your vote and they register as a burned vote and then they don't really care, but
it doesn't matter at that point.
No, you burned your vote.
Listen, right. Ford's going to steal it.
I think steal is the best word. Well, he gave out $200 checks to everybody, so.
He called an election when he knew that he could get elected again. You don't call an election. Nobody calls a snap election thinking.
No, but Trump's coming.
Trump's not coming. Trump's doing what he's doing. Let him do what he's doing. I don't give a shit what he's doing.
Oh, man. Right? I don't know.
I don't mind all the Latina posts and memes and shit like that, how we should have a little bit of discretion, you know, on who goes and who gets sent back.
Which is the law is the law, man. You got to enforce the law because if you don't enforce the law.
I find it funny.
What can you do? But anyways.
Telenova. All right.
Hey, when this podcast airs, we might be saying instead, congratulations to the PC government for winning another election.
They're stealing it. So it's just accept it. He's going to continue his corruption reign.
Did you see all of the unions that are supporting Doug Ford? Because
they pay him.
It's the first thing I thought, Manny. I'm like, how many millions did these guys get?
They pay him.
If we got $200 checks, that means that these guys, everyone else got
millions. They pay him. Simple as that.
I don't know, man. Goodness. But listen, the unions definitely need to support the government that is going to dump billions and billions of dollars into infrastructure and help keep a lot of these, the construction sector afloat, I guess. I don't know. Maybe that's the rationale behind it. But okay, let's jump into this.
What are we chatting
about? Today, our topic is
it's like
dropped loads. You know, you drop a load here, you drop a load there, Manny. Go to this other place, drop another load.
We never discussed this.
No, this is literally dropping loads.
It's dangerous as hell, huh? If it's not done correctly.
Nah, you don't want to just be dropping loads randomly.
And we are not talking about the Johnnies. All right?
We're talking about
legitimate loads here.
So the movement of loads on construction projects. This can be something as simple as picking up a skid with a forklift or a telehandler and placing it somewhere, and it can go into something as complicated as tandem lifts, critical lifts, when you're lifting, you know, extremely heavy loads and placing them in different locations, to even to the point where you're looking at helicopters placing components on top of buildings and stuff like that, right? So
let me do a quick shout out to Versa Homes in BC. Because he just posted last week on his Instagram, a residential house on the side of a cliff being built in BC, different levels going into the cliff and anchored into the cliff. And he was, I think he mobilized a 150-foot long crane to move a 5,000-pound beam.
Holy sh!
One beam.
Wow.
And it was pretty impressive for a residential house.
Yeah.
This is a house.
Yeah, no, I get it, man. I get it. There's definitely some interesting things that we can do with machinery and equipment, from mobile cranes to tower cranes, obviously, and a variety of other different pieces of equipment that are designed to pick up loads and move loads and stuff. But yeah, have you seen that video in China where these guys are building something on the side of a cliff and basically they have like 50 drones? And these drones are flying back and forth.
Oh, yeah, they're picking up
cement.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And they're taking the cement back and forth, boom, dump it, come back, pick up another load, fly back. And it's just nonstop drones going back and forth, dumping.
It's scary.
Yeah.
But business-wise, efficient.
Well, yeah, they're leaving the bags of cement there and then it's being mixed and put in and stuff like that,
but
right?
But it moves a lot faster.
Oh, yeah, these guys were picking up, I think it was 5 bags at a time. Right? And they're moving it across a valley.
So what happened here? Did something happen?
So yeah. So first, a big shout out to Full Sheets. We follow them on Instagram. Awesome dude, BC. And they're always posting awesome things in terms of safety or in terms of high-rise construction and stuff like that. Their Full Sheets' picture and videos actually made the CBC because WorkSafe BC is opening up a third investigation into, they call it accidents, but it's incidents at an Oak Ridge construction site with search warrants. A third one, yeah, apparently.
In this year?
I guess recently. I'm not exactly sure all the specifics on this, but apparently this job site keeps on dropping things. And the last video they posted was a bundle of pipe that was picked up with some chains. And the pipe slipped out and came down and missed everybody by a few feet.
Like it slipped out and like came down like as if there were dowels, like arrows coming straight down?
Pretty much.
Yeah. Holy cow.
What's that movie called? Final Destination?
Oh, with the logs?
Yeah. Something like that, just vertically.
Holy.
Right? So
this is the third time.
On this site, yes. Search warrant says prime contractor Ellis Don wants willingness to cooperate formally documented.
I'm glad that you said that name on this show regarding that. I wouldn't want to say that name attached to this.
A still from an Instagram post cited by WorkSafe BC investigators as part of a probe into an incident, see they correct themselves, where metal pipes came loose from a load under transfer by crane. The pipes fell about 50 meters. That's a lot. 45. To the ground below. And then the little thing here, Full Sheets Instagram. So yeah, loads, dropping loads. And yeah, it's always interesting.
Oh, why do you think that happened? What was the failure?
I think it was,
'cause you started off by talking about there's a whole system. There's the way things, material arrives on site. It has to get into the site now to the workers.
The next slide, we're going to cover that.
Okay.
Kind of the planning and what's involved with moving loads on construction projects, depending on the size of the load and the path and stuff. We're going to get into that. But just for a bit of a recap here, the construction regulations deal with loads over workers, hoisting, rigging, manufacturer's instructions, maintenance of machinery and equipment, condition of slings, condition of chains, the whole nine yards. Everything's laid out in the construction regulations.
And who's responsible for maintaining all that?
Maintaining what?
Well, who's responsible?
All of those items that we just kind of, it usually falls on the employer. It could fall on the constructor. It could be a shared responsibility depending on what it is. Could fall on the tower crane operator. Everyone plays a role and a part. Okay. And depending on the scenario, obviously some of those players may have more responsibility than the others. All right? So we got some videos, as usual. Again, I'm warning everybody right now, some of these videos are graphic.
Oh, hey, man, I've seen that one.
Well, yeah, you follow us on Instagram.
So I've seen it, basically.
I just preemptive warning here. If, you know, some of this stuff is
there's
not
there's going to be deaths.
Yep. All right, so first one. This one was from Full Sheets again. Full Sheets, I hope you don't mind, I borrowed this. But let's watch this.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
Huh? I think the caption on this was flying blind in gusts of wind.
Is that Toronto?
No, I think this is BC.
Smash it in a couple times.
What's the tower crane operator doing?
He probably can't even see the slope.
Holy, he's going back and forth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a new building behind there, right?
It looks like it.
A completed building, I mean.
No, no, no. This looks like a building that's under construction.
Oh, no. Okay, yeah. Well, at least it's going
definitely
down.
Under construction. Well, yeah. Not before it banged in a few times, right? But again, you know, the high-rise forming guys probably have to deal with this issue more than any other trade in construction.
But they have lookouts. They have, like, the swampers, right?
You have signal persons. You have hoisting and rigging. You have tower crane operators.
So where are they? Like, they're like this? Is that what they're going
on? No. It's just that they do it the most. They're the most frequent sector that picks up loads. They're the ones that run the tower crane. And that tower crane is not only picking up loads for the forming guys. It's picking up the loads for all the other trades.
Everybody.
Right.
It's constantly moving, that crane.
The crane
loads are constantly.
Yeah, the crane cannot stop, right? So whenever you're moving loads, you're looking at a few factors when it comes to safety, right? So, and this isn't all of the factors. Depending on the scenario, there might be some other considerations to take care of, but this is what I could fit on the PowerPoint. So, right? Yeah, man, I'm just trying to cram it all in.
It makes sense.
Sometimes you can't cram it all in, man.
I guess the tower crane guys really get upset at the fact that...
Or girls.
I've never met a tower crane operator.
I have.
Female, have you?
Yeah.
Which is great. But I guess they get upset at the fact that here's this one video of 1,000 other tower crane moves, you know, loads that didn't go wrong.
Yeah.
But here's this one that it becomes this stamp to everybody. And they like, tower cranes are dangerous. Load operators dangerous. Everybody's dangerous. Listen,
construction in itself is inherently dangerous.
You can't paint the entire industry based off of this one video. That's the thing.
No, you can't. But again, these are the worst case scenarios. Yeah. And the possibility of this worst case scenario can happen to anybody. So you need to be aware of the worst case scenarios.
Yeah.
Right? When you're doing these things. What's the, you know, and that's a legitimate question. What's the worst thing that can happen? And that's the question usually you start off with when you're designing procedures, when you're looking at hazards, when you're looking at risk. You know, in this business, unfortunately for myself, I'm speaking for at least, I always start off with the worst case scenario. This guy or this worker can get completely smashed, dead. Okay, so how can we prevent that? Right? And it's logically looking at the process that's taking place and all the safety factors that are going to go into it. Right? So number one, planning and more planning, right? Organize where your workload or where your load's going to be, where it needs to go, you know, how are you going to control that load? This is always the first stage. Right? You're taking a look at the work area, you know, you have a staging area, a lot of loads, a lot of equipment, a lot of machinery, people walking around, et cetera, et cetera. You're picking up loads. How are you going to control that area? How are you going to prevent other workers or other individuals from entering that area?
Yeah.
Right. Then you're looking at the size of the load, the type of the load, the weight capacity, or what the weight is of that load. You know, you have to make sure that the math all clicks. And there's a lot of math that goes into
this. Who's responsible for that? Is that the person who's shipping the material?
Again, it's you as ultimately as the person that's doing the hoisting and rigging, and you ultimately as a tower crane operator need to know what you're picking up.
So yeah, but that information has to be given up before that load even arrives on site.
Sure. But the buck will stop there, meaning if you didn't get any information, you need to ask, right?
How do you determine how heavy a load is?
That's a good question.
I'm assuming that it would all be labeled.
Well, you'd like to think so. Some things aren't. Some things it's like, hey, can you move this box over here to over there?
And I have
can
no
you
just, idea how heavy that box is.
Okay, but hey, again, the lift capacity of a tower crane versus...
I don't know.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of tons, man. It's a lot of tons that go into it, right? But start looking at like industrial forklifts and then how much can they lift and then center of gravity and throwing it off balance and causing it to tip over or collapse. These are all considerations that need to be taken into place before you pick up any load. Right? Worker training. You're looking at the training that worker has. You're looking at the training of all the people that are involved in picking up this load, moving this load, whatever it may be. In the extreme situations where you have a helicopter picking up a load and putting it on top of a building, that happened in Mississauga. I got to watch that. That was pretty cool. You ever see those?
Which building? I've seen the video of CN Tower.
Man, it was one of those buildings that has the copper near Square One. And it was a building that had like a copper top piece, and then it had like a spiral or a little antenna at the top. So they got the helicopter to come in on a Saturday. I was still an inspector. I spent the morning watching
it. To bring it in?
Yeah.
And then they just dropped it.
Yeah, and then they drop it and people connected, workers connected. But it was pretty cool to watch one of those. You ever seen those helicopter cranes?
Yeah.
They're pretty awesome, man.
They're very impressive.
Right?
We need more of that. But you're not allowed to fly in the core.
You're not allowed to fly where?
Helicopters in the core. In Toronto core.
What do you mean? Orange helicopters flying in and out all the time.
No, that's ambulance. That's an emergency.
CP-24, you telling me?
For personal or for construction?
No, I'm sure there's some rules around that. No?
Who was it on the show? Someone told me about this. They got rid of that. When was the last time you saw a helicopter contributing to either a personal flight path or a construction flight path? Other than the CN Tower being put together by Olga back in the 70s.
I don't know.
You never see helicopters contributing to construction in the Toronto core.
Okay, contributing to construction, sure. But I've seen helicopters. How about these private helicopters that land on Bay Street and some of these buildings? No, they don't have
helicopters. You're thinking New York. You're thinking Chicago.
Well, we don't have landing pads on some of our buildings?
No.
No.
Look into it, man.
I'm going to.
Look into that.
It's going to be our
There's a reason why we don't see buzzing helicopters in the core. They got rid of it. They said no.
It's no fly zone for helicopters, except ambulances. Huh. I don't know. I'll look
You've
into
seen
that.
I think I've seen ambulances arrive on the Gardner for an airlift, right? But for there's no billionaires or anybody here in Toronto core that's flying their chopper into their top of their high rise. That's not happening here.
I feel like there is.
There isn't.
It's a lot of money in Toronto.
Where's Millionaire's Row? Where's Billionaire's Row in Toronto?
I feel like some of these guys are flying their helicopters.
You know where it is? It's in Ottawa. Spoke. That's where Billionaire's Row is. It's in Ottawa.
It's wherever the politicians live.
That's what I mean.
Okay. All right.
So you know what? I have a lot more respect now for everybody that's associated with a crane on a job site, because there is a lot going on in that head of theirs, man.
This may be...
It's stressful, man.
It's a very complex task.
Yeah.
And again, depending on what you're doing, where you're doing, etc. Right? So we're looking at worker training and everyone that's involved. Then you're starting to look at the rigging and the equipment. Is it adequate enough for what you're lifting? Has it been inspected? Does it have its weight capacity tags and labels on it? The way you're rigging the load, is it the best way to rig the load? There's a variety of different ways to rig loads, depending on their size and I guess design and weight and sharp edges and variety of other things.
I mean, there's a lot going on in that worker's head, man.
Oh yeah. This is not an easy task. Tag lines and control. And the video that we just saw right now is obviously a load that's out of control due to inclement weather. Right. So you want to make sure you're maintaining control. You want to make sure you're maintaining a visual on your load to the best that you can as a tower crane operator. But again, the nature of someone can be extremely challenging. And a good example of not being able to see your load was that video that I showed you. Remember where the worker got his arm or his leg? I think it was his arm stuck in the tag line and went up 20 stories.
Yeah.
And the tower crane didn't notice. Right? Because that means that they didn't have a visual on their load. But that also means that somebody else didn't have a visual on their load. So
somebody else dropped the ball.
Someone dropped the ball on that one. Like, even in that case, how that worker got higher than 10 feet is beyond my understanding. You know, you'd be screaming. Whoever's hoisting and rigging and signal person swamper, you'd hope that they'd see someone.
Now, if he's connected to that crane, is he technically tied off?
Yeah, he was tied off already. You know, you're looking at overhead protection.
Oh, yeah. Right? For sure.
Well, sure. During the path, and overhead protection says at any point of access and egress to the project. Unfortunately, some of these projects are organized where they have multiple points of access and egress, or access and egress is not being controlled at the high rise project. So you have workers walking into areas, just popping out of the building where they shouldn't be popping out of the building at times. Right, you think that access and egress is more controlled on a high-risk project, but unfortunately, sometimes
it's complicated.
It's not that complicated. You put up some guardrails on the first level and kind of steer people into the entry and exit points of a building. And at those points, you know, overhead protection is required. But again, there's been cases. I think a picture got sent to me a few weeks ago. They dropped a load of rebar, and the picture was from inside of the hoist, and the rebar had penetrated the hoist like a shish kebab. So there was like three pieces of rebar that had gone right on an angle. I'll post it next week.
So it just slid out of the bundle?
I'm guessing. But bang, right into the hoist. Right? And there have been cases where the hoist has, a load has been dropped on the hoist, people inside of it. There's been cases, one fatality case that I did, a worker had walked into the staging area for the forming guys where they had all their fly forms. And 23 stories up, the forming and the tower crane, the swamper and stuff, they were flying an outrigger platform. They were moving it from one level to another. We've talked about this one. And while they were doing that, a piece of pipe had fallen off the building, 23 stories, and a worker was in direct of that work path. And the pipe hit him right in the head. Took out a whole chunk of his skull, brains all over the floor, all that nice stuff. But
there's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on, and controlling people and controlling workers underneath loads is an extremely difficult task. You know, I feel for some of these tower crane operators, man, because it's like you're up there. Everyone looks like ants from where your perspective is. You're flying things back and right. You're honking your horn. No one's paying attention. No one's listening. You know, you're trying your best. Yeah, it becomes so
really. Here's a thought, like, because I do this all the time. I put a camera just above the picking point of a crane to on capture. The
block? Sorry? On the block?
Well, just above the hooking point, okay. Right? I put a camera so that it's not obstructing what they need to do. But I put that because of the perspective. And I'm just wondering, why don't tower cranes have cameras?
That's a genius idea, Manny. Throw a camera onto the block, you know, a GoPro live feed, and you can see exactly what your load is doing. That you may have.
Why just, hasn't in 2025 been a norm?
I don't know.
Because you could throw a GoPro exactly a wide angle, yeah, and you'll see everything right at that point.
Yeah, no, that's a great idea.
I guess the person on the bottom who actually is making the connection before they take off, they have to constantly be aware of that camera having a continuous power source or whatever. And like, it's
that's a small obstacle, but having an additional set of eyes, I mean, multiple cameras, multiple perspectives, I'm sure can avoid a lot of things. Double check
just before you take off with the load that nothing funny's there in the camera.
Yeah.
And just lift it up.
Another fatality case I did, was a company downtown Toronto. And this, I wasn't even an inspector. I was a consultant. I got hired by the constructor to come in and defend them, or do the investigation. But this forming company had picked up a bag of spoiled concrete.
Oh, okay.
And they put it in one of those bags. No. Did they put it in the bag? No. They had put it into something, and then they put the rebar.
Oh, you were saying?
The candy cane rebar as picking points, and they waited for 24 hours, and they picked that up, and then they moved that that box of concrete, and then it came off. And then it dropped 80 feet, and then it crushed the worker.
The rebar separated from the concrete?
It was hooked onto candy cane rebar.
It would have been pulled out.
The rebar surprisingly wasn't pulled out. It just kind of, I guess, shock loaded or jumped. The load jumped a bit when they moved it up too fast and stopped it, and it went like this.
It got off the hook.
It came right off the hooks. Oh, the worst was the video.
Jeez.
I have that video, and man, it's a gruesome video. But anyways. Landing area and unsecuring. So once you put your load down in a safe location, unsecuring it, surprisingly loads shift. Well, not that surprisingly, but loads shift sometimes during movements. And when you go to unhook, and then the load can shift onto your leg. There's been investigations like that where, you know, they go to move something or they drop the load unsecured, and as soon as they unsecure it, the load collapses on top of that worker.
Yeah.
So that's a possibility. But a majority of these things is just, you know, loads being dropped on workers.
I mean, they've been doing construction this way for so many years, decades, that how else do you do it that you make it safer? I don't know if there's
again, it's following all of these processes, right? And, you know, weather also plays a big factor because, you know, some of these tower cranes, they're running. They're running springtime, they're running wintertime, they're running weather. You know, it takes a lot for these guys to shut down the tower crane, you know, and I'm sure they push their limits when it's like inclement weather. And, you know, most of these tower cranes at 50 kilometers or 55 kilometers, you got to shut them down. Hmm. That's what the manufacturer's instruction says and the engineering. But, you know, I've done a poll on Instagram, you know, when do you guys shut down? To tower crane operators, hey, when do you guys shut down? When it's over 50, when it's over 60? Never. Majority of the answer was never.
Never.
Yeah, they don't care. It's not, wait a sec, let me rephrase that. It's not that the tower crane operators don't care. It's that if they voice their concerns, they're going to get replaced. Replaced, or they're going to get told, shut up and keep working.
So they would have continued working during the recent storm?
I'm not saying they would have. I hope to think that nobody would.
Visibility must have been bad.
Oh, it was horrible. I was driving in that storm and I was at zero visibility.
So can you be an operator, a crane, and then...
Again, wind gusts. Wind is the biggest one, right? But rain, the reality is once concrete's on site, it's getting poured. Let's watch this other video.
Yeah, this video, this guy's going to get crushed.
Well,
yeah.
Hey, listen.
I get it.
It is what it is. And the reality of this video is...
It's not
this
Toronto.
It's not Toronto, number one. But number two, this is an example of being in the wrong place at the wrong time and definitely not standing anywhere near loads or where there's a possibility of a load failure.
Speaking of which, I found it very entertaining. The recent airplane crash in Toronto.
Okay.
Not that. That wasn't entertaining.
No.
I found it very entertaining. All the Americans reporting on it, eh?
Why?
Because every single American said, there's been a plane crash in Toronto.
Oh, how they say it?
Toronto. There's no two T's in there, man. It's one T. Sorry to say, man. It's Toronto.
Listen, since I've done this podcast, a few people have noted, like, Philip, you really have a heavy Portuguese accent.
Yeah. I've never noticed that. What the fuck is that supposed to mean?
So you know what they pointed out?
Who are these
that
people?
When I say this and that, I actually don't say this and that. I say this and that.
So you say it with a D?
Yeah. So apparently what's going to happen now is I'm going to get a t-shirt.
This and that?
That's going to say this and that. And that's it.
Listen, the show's from the streets. It's always going to be from the streets.
It's this and that.
It's Toronto, not Toronto. Now we can watch the guy crush. I've seen it so many times. I don't need to watch him crush.
We're just two Portuguese guys talking about safety, man. Leave us alone.
This and that. What do you think, India? I don't know.
Who knows?
Why was he on the flatbed? I don't think there's a report on that one, right? That's just like done.
Yeah, there's a report. if whoever the enforcement agency in
you
that
you never
country.
Stand underneath the, I mean, it still happens on whether it's there or it happens here, it still happens. Like you'll catch yourself as a worker without even realizing it. You're under a load. Just
sure. And I can understand from the perspective, I'm a worker on the slab level and the load is 50, 60, 70 feet in the air. I didn't even notice it because I'm looking down doing something and the tower crane operator didn't even signal or anything. Okay. But in that case,
that was avoidable.
Massively avoidable. Yeah. Like, why would you even stand there? But again, did you see what failed first was the rigging?
Yeah, the rigging. The one point rigging. Yeah,
that one point well, and just chain reaction.
What was it? So it was a chain. It's a hook anchored to the main point. So what would have broken there? One of the links or the point connected to the actual
it could
load
have been,
itself?
Yeah,
I think it's that link. So whatever. It could have been a turnbuckle or what's it called? A U?
What's yeah, one of those pieces of rebar or something that's embedded inside the load as a pickup point.
Yeah.
Right? It could be a variety of different pickup points if you're using pickup points, right? But some of these pickup points, you know, you go onto a job site and like, and this is something recent, I think it was a couple months ago, and we were looking at a box that they use to put their tools and stuff, and the crane, the hoisting rigging connects it with some chains and boom, takes this box up. So we start looking at this box, the pickup points were all rusted, bent, damaged, right? And the whole box looked like it had just taken beatings for years, rusted and falling apart. Some of the metal, the welds are coming apart and stuff. And you look at this and you're like, hey, you know, not for nothing, but this box looks like a piece of garbage. And you guys are still using it. You know, this is a multi-million dollar project. You're a multi-million dollar company. Is there any reason in particular why we're still using this piece of shit box? Because, you know, I don't use this box every day. You guys use this box every day. And it's plain for me to see that this thing is a piece of garbage. How is it that you didn't notice it's a piece of garbage? Oh, you're right, Phil. It is a piece of garbage.
Because nobody did the work beforehand. Nobody let's double check the gear.
Let's double check and triple check, right? You're looking for the weakest points in a situation like this. What is the weakest points of your entire system to pick up this load and move this load? If there's going to be a failure, where will that failure happen? You know, what is the weakest link in this chain, right? And this is what you have to plan, organize, and control when it comes to safety with all these things. Because again, you're making a visual determination. You know, you're not doing a non-destructive test on a pickup point. You know, this is just a visual determination. So you're trying to hope that you can catch some of these issues, but then there's just blatant issues or blatant like that box where it's a piece of garbage.
Let me ask you, think videos like this that are not in Canada, when people that work in the construction industry see it, are they more conscious of their safety or less?
I would like to think so. And keep in mind, this video that we just saw, everyone's wearing hard hats, everyone's wearing vests. This doesn't seem like some Mickey Mouse operation. You know, even in other countries, you can have high levels of safety, especially countries that follow the ISO, international standards and stuff like that, right? It's fair for us to talk about other countries, but the reality is there are other countries that are better at safety than Canada.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
And, you know, it's easy to paint a brush this culture or this group or this society or this region of the world. Yeah, sure. But again, depending on the operation, depending on who the employer is, depending if it's a multinational company, depending on, you know, there's a lot of depending on.
That's the thing is that we don't know the whole history of that video.
What I can say is that every single video I've posted on Instagram where there's a fatality or a serious injury and it's happened in another country, I can tell you for a fact that it's already happened here. Just people aren't wearing sandals. That's all.
Listen, China and India, they're up there at the top of the list. Simple as that.
Yeah, but again, look at the two countries you just mentioned. What do you think the value of life of a worker are in these two countries?
Nothing. Like we were having a conversation recently at a cigar lounge, and we were talking about there was a situation that happened in a city in China, and it didn't even make the news because the city was only 5 million people. 5 million people in China is nothing.
I can imagine.
But 5 million people in Toronto, that's something.
I think so.
So it's like, it's just a numbers game, right? They've got 1.5 billion.
I know, man. But right? Again, it comes down to what a society values life. If the society values life, then they'll put in rules and enforcement and boundaries and parameters and regulations and stuff like that to protect that life, the rights of workers.
Are you a better driver if you slow down to take a look at the rubbernecking of an accident that happened?
I don't know.
Like, this is all
but we all look.
I don't.
You try your best.
I'm purposely not looking. No, I don't. There's no value in my life looking on the other side of the road of a vehicle. I'm not contributing to saving the person or securing the load. I have me driving on this side that's not affected on the other side. Have no purpose whatsoever. My purpose is to be on the road to get to point B. Sure. That's my purpose. But everybody wants to slow down and take a look at it. But that's their form of entertainment.
It's human nature. And if you want to look at an example, take NASCAR. A lot of people watch NASCAR, not because of the race, but because of the crashes.
Yes. Well, that's not racing, in my opinion, and you're not going to offend all the Americans. You're driving 200 clicks going left.
Manny, if we do a show where we don't offend anybody, I'll be very impressed.
Formula One is a different thing because it takes skill and you're gearing up and down, right?
Man, I saw Formula One in Montreal with one of the best weekends I've ever had.
Because it's racing. It's actually racing. It's endurance.
It's pretty cool. That's
a different stuff, right? But I'm just trying to figure out, like, we watch these videos and I'm like, does this make you conscious of being better at safety?
Well, let's take a look at this. So this picture on the left.
Now, this is Toronto because I see Skydome.
Well, it says Spadina on it.
Well, I see the CN Tower and I see Skydome.
Yes, okay.
So I already know where I am in the map. I get it.
Yeah, and this...
And that's a platform.
Yeah, that's
not up there.
No, that's some forming stuff, some forming false work there. And anyways, these guys dropped this entire load right in the middle of Spadina and John Street.
Who cleans that up? The construction workers?
They better clean it up.
I'm just wondering if the guys all come down.
They better clean
it up. Take a piece.
I think at this site, this is the second time they dropped the load.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's the second time.
Repeat offenders, man.
Well, I don't know. I don't know.
In that situation, what happens?
One thing's for sure. Things falling off buildings happens a lot more frequently than people realize. Because they fall. And if it doesn't hit anybody, and if there's no damage, public property or anything.
Doesn't make the news, really.
It doesn't make anything. It's cleaned right under that rug. Oh, shit, we dropped something. Nobody got hurt. Okay, grab that load and move it again. You know what I mean?
I never looked into this. What's the history of the Sky Dome? Were there any fatalities? Was the safety good?
To the best of my knowledge, there was 4 fatalities building the Sky Dome.
4 fatalities? Really?
Yeah. It could have been 2. I'm
what about CN Tower?
Because I know one of the officers that investigated it.
So there was 4, huh? And that was 89.
Bro, apparently, please don't quote me on this. This is way before my time. But 2 workers were on the catwalk. You know the catwalk at the top of the Sky Dome? Yeah. The little catwalk
For the whole roof. Yeah, I know.
They fell from there.
Oy.
Yeah. So I think that's what happened to the Sky Dome. And then the CN Tower, I think there was at least 6. Surprisingly, not more. But they should do that. They should go through all of not all of the buildings, but like the landmarks in Toronto, CN Tower, you know, Casa Loma, you know, Sky Dome.
Oh, I got another one.
And see how many people, workers died.
I got another one.
Billy Bishop Airport, the tunnel under the airport.
I got another one.
The bridges.
I think what every single building in Canada should do, any worker who dies, their name.
And a plaque.
Yeah.
Genius.
Every single structure being built.
Genius.
Right at the front door.
Yeah.
Lost workers on this one.
Yeah, man.
And your objective as a builder, as a developer, is not to have a plaque.
Of course.
That's the objective.
Yeah. You should get awarded for not having a plaque. I think that's a great idea too. Can you imagine on a low-rise site that build 1,000 homes and then you go to the park in that neighborhood and there's a little plaque? The building of this park and this residential area, unfortunately, cost this.
We lost these workers building this community here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen,
a day once a year is not enough for me, man. I think that.
No.
Day of safety, April 26th.
26th. Day of mourning.
Day of mourning, right? So it's like I think we should be putting plaques.
Yeah, I don't think.
Watch what happens now. I bet you any money Ford probably brings something up like that.
What? Because we talked about it?
No, he brought up the tunnel after I've been talking about the tunnel for fucking years on the show.
Listen,
if someone reached out to me, man.
If you want to see what's going to happen that tunnel, and this goes for everybody out there, Google Los Angeles Tunnel, California, the tunnel that they're building. Google that and see how much over budget and what they've done.
You mean the one that's going from LA to San Francisco?
That's some crazy.
I thought Elon was attached to that.
No, that's Hyperloop.
No, that's Hyperloop. That's not the same tunnel?
No.
Listen.
Or is some construction project.
The only way you can build a tunnel and a high-speed rail in Canada is if you first get rid of the corruption at all levels, starting out with the political consulting corruption. Because it's never going to happen. I'm telling you, you're going to waste all that money and nothing's ever going to get built. Look at the LRT. And there's another plaque that should be put up there too as well.
For all the businesses that went bankrupt.
All the people that stole money. But I think, honestly, I think workers that pass on job sites, there should be a plaque of those people, their names and the date.
Manny, that may be one of the greatest idea that this show has ever produced.
I think so. I think that's a great idea. I think every developer out there should be proud, not proud, they should be implementing this and be proud of the fact that there's no plaque on their building.
Yeah.
That's what they should be looking to achieve.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great idea, Manny, and
loss of life is loss of life, but we go around, we walk around cities. All people walk around cities. No one ever pays attention to the workers that died. We know about the story about San Francisco Bridge, Golden Gate, and the net that the engineer put in and how many lives it saved, right? So there's lots of things that people are conscious of safety that will force building people to do it. Oh, so
yeah.
I think we get a lot of developers get away with a lot of stuff that they shouldn't get away with. And I think a plaque should be like, that should be part of the code. Should be part of the process now.
Manny, I've never
agreed
with you more.
All right, so now we say this. They clean it up, which is great. Wonderful. Yeah. All that traffic's diverted. Spadina. Oh, that must have been a mess getting out of that area.
Oh, man.
Jeez, that would have been a mess that day, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. But again, listen, you know, moving loads, especially over public ways like roads, right? Now you're getting into the mix of protecting pedestrians and stuff like that. You know, and there's a lot of variables that go into this, and securing these loads and securing material and equipment on buildings. You know how many times there's been situations where the wind picks up and sheets of plywood just things just start flying, insulation, boom, boom. It's kites.
The wind up there is
it's another world, man.
Yeah, it's different, right?
All right, let's take a look at this.
This is another good one. Yeah,
this video. We posted this video a couple months ago. This video got 12.9 million views. 12.9 million views, Manny. This is the.
Would it have gotten 24 if it was two arms that got pinched in there? Or what?
I have no idea, man.
Well, technically, it was two arms because there's two guys on one guy.
Stop ruining the end of this video. But it's not ruined. The guy's just lost his arm.
Listen, man, these guys are going to be background extras on the next Pirates movie. That's what's going to happen. Oh,
that's a rough one.
Yeah, his arm is stuck in there.
I feel like stuck's not even the word for it.
This is South America?
Everyone's speaking Spanish. But they got hard hats on, safety vests, you know, adequate PPE. So again.
Tranquilo.
How do you say tranquilo to a guy that has 5 tons? Right? So in that video.
It's avoidable. Totally.
Again, listen, that situation looks like, you know, you're stuck between a rock and a hard place. Not to put a pun on it, but, you know, you're sticking your part of your body underneath a load.
Why would they have put their arm in
there? It could have been that they had some blocking in there or some 4x4, some piece of wood, something, you know, and they had to remove it. And the other guy was pushing it out on one side and the other guy stuck his arm to get it. It could be something as simple as that, right? And we've talked about trust on some of our previous shows. You know, you trust your coworkers, you trust your boss, you trust the machinery and equipment, you trust that this isn't going to fail, you trust that that's going to support the load that it says is going to support. Right, you trust the rigging. You trust you have blind trust here, right? And you're trusting that this thing's not going to fall. And you're like, oh, I'm just going to stick my arm in there for 2 seconds and grab this one piece of wood. And hey, do you mind sliding it? Because I can't reach it. And now you got two guys in this situation, and boom, something failed. And that case, most likely, it was the rigging based on some of that video.
Because they would have lifted it up right away if it wasn't the rigging, right? Because that operator would have been just lifted up right away.
You would think so, but again. What based on the nature of these injuries, your arm's severed. It's just crushed.
You can't save it.
No, that's done. Everything inside underneath your skin has been pulverized. Muscles, ligaments, tendons, bone. It's just, right? And, you know, it's like those scenarios where someone gets pinned between a tree and a car. And the second you move the car, they're dead. Yeah. You know, we've had some situations like that where I think it was one of John's cases where a worker got pinned by a bucket and they knew that the second they took this bucket off, the guy was going to die. But the weight was holding everything in place type deal.
Wow.
You know what I mean? And then once they take it off, right? And in this case too, tourniquets and preparing once they lift that weight off, you're going to just have blood shooting. And
yeah, of course, right?
Right? One of those situations. So it can get really gruesome, man. When loads drop, you're looking at the weight, you're looking at gravity, you're looking at velocity. There's a lot of physics that go into some of these calculations in terms of setting up the load and the worst case scenario, you know, what's going to happen if this load fails. And, you know, you can take the simple analogy. If you go to the top of the CN Tower and you drop a penny, we didn't even make pennies anymore, but you drop a penny off the top of the CN Tower and it hits someone in the head, will it kill them? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Right? Because you start hitting velocity.
Yeah.
Right? So
who's at fault in this situation?
Man, you know, it depends on that situation.
Is it the worker for putting their arm where they shouldn't ever put their arm?
Ultimately, the worker's paying the price, right? So faults, not faults.
No, a supervisor, or is it the crane op? Is it because of failure of the rigging?
Again, look at the previous show that we did. The supervisor, you know, he checked the vehicle, dismissed the safety concerns of that worker, and then the next day the worker dies. Right. So in this situation, it could have been most likely it was the rigging and that load dropped. But it could have been, we don't know the whole picture. We don't know the whole scenario.
Yeah, we're just seeing the end here.
We can make assumptions. But, you know, never a dull moment.
Oh, you blocked this one out. Two companies fined a certain amount.
X after a workplace fatality.
Okay, so what's the situation? Why two companies?
That's a good question. So let's see.
Was someone subcontracting another?
I'm guessing that they both had responsibilities, duties and responsibilities when it came to this case.
Well, that's not seven-figure blackout there, not much. So.
Oh, wait. Don't read. Don't look at the top. Sorry, I couldn't. All right. Let's read the description of the offense first.
Okay.
A worker fell from the roof of a building under construction. New Horizon failed to ensure there were warning signs posted about the fall hazard as required by Section 23 of the Occupational Health and Safety Act. TKEM Electric failed to provide information, instruction, or supervision related to the fall hazard as required by Section 25(2)(a) of the Act. Now,
wait, I'm confused.
I know, me too. Let's zoom in here and let's take a look. On August 16th, 2022, an electrician was running wire to the roof of a two-story commercial building under construction. While on the roof, the worker suffered a fatal fall to the ground below. So this worker was not tied off.
The electrician.
Or he was tied off in a way that did not stop him from hitting the ground.
Okay.
The roof had a parapet wall along its perimeter with no temporary fencing or guarding at the roof's edge. So no guardrails.
Okay.
Access to this part of the roof was from a stairwell that was not locked. So the worker had access to the roof level. The stairwell and roof had no signs warning about the fall hazard. So a danger sign identifying hazards is required on projects. New Horizon failed as a constructor to ensure that there were warning signs of the fall hazard on the roof. And TKM Electric failed as an employer to provide the worker with information, instruction, and supervision related to the fall hazard posed by the roof's edge as required by Section 25(2)(a). So technically, none of these companies were found guilty for the worker failing to be protected against falls.
But the worker themselves were not tied off.
Correct. So what most likely happened in this scenario? The Ministry of Labor laid a bunch of charges directly related to falls.
To who? To both those companies?
Most likely the employer, possibly the constructor also.
Okay.
And ultimately, this is a plea deal. And they pled guilty to, I failed to put up a sign.
Wow.
Right? And the other company, the employer of the worker, failed to give them supervision, provide the worker with information, instruction, or supervision related to the fall hazard.
What would be the motive for an MOL inspector to plea?
It's not the MOL inspector that pleads, the Ministry of the Attorney General, the lawyers.
So it's their, why? Why would they want to plea? If there's fact, if it's actually good, everything's fine. Like,
so think about it from the perspective of... I'm going to try to think about the perspective, and I'm going to play devil's advocate here. If an inspector lays a bunch of charges, and I'm the lawyer, and I got to fight these charges, I got to go to court, I got to do a bunch of paperwork, I got to go multiple times, there has to be gathering, I have to do witness statements, I got to prepare for an entire trial.
Yeah. It's part of the job.
Well, I think so, yeah. But if I complete it out, I don't have to do all that work. And that being said, here's the best excuse. It frees up the court's time. Right? We're not draining the resources of the court. That's how they frame it. But ultimately, they get to not do 98% of the work. So what do they get to do? Sit in meetings with other lawyers that may have worked at the Ministry of Attorney General previously. And basically they all sit around a room and say, okay, man, how are we going to deal this out? Right? What I do think in these cases is that all the charges that are laid by the Ministry of Labor should show. Let's see how many charges they got charged with.
What do you mean should show?
They should demonstrate. So the police bust the criminal gang for drugs and guns. They do a big show. We busted these guys. We laid 42 charges against 17 individuals. Some of these charges are this. And they lay it all out.
Right? They don't do that in the final report here. They just plead it out.
Well, none of these reports, they don't show any of the charges. So with criminal law, you're innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah.
But the police have no problems blasting on TV all the charges they laid you with or all the charges they laid during that case on you. Even though I'm innocent, you have to prove that I'm guilty. The onus is the other way in the Occupational Health and Safety Act. You're guilty until you prove you're innocent. So if the Ministry of Labor is laying charges, there's ample evidence to support these charges. Right? So here you go, a situation where this was obviously pled out. And for the Ministry of Attorney General, that lawyer, that's a win. For the defense lawyer, that's a win.
Because you win.
Because you didn't get charged and found guilty on 10 charges. You only got it on one charge and you got a slap on the wrist.
But that constructor's still constructing.
Yeah.
Most likely.
100% most likely. Right? So everyone counts this as a win. Where I see it as a massive fail.
Everyone counts it as a win except for the worker who's not here anymore.
And their family, I'm guessing, too.
And the family.
Yeah.
Whatever that, yeah.
So this worker's fatality.
This was a fatality. How old was the worker? We don't know, right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, look. So
two companies fined $230,000.
They split that? That's the idea?
I'm guessing. Let's see.
So 115 worker, each.
Date of offense, dates of conviction, October 17th for New Horizon.
So it happened in 22.
Take summer.
So it ends in fall of
penalty 24. Imposed. Following, New Horizon was fined $130,000.
Oh, one was fined more than the other.
And TKM Electric, which I believe was the employer.
Employers.
Was only fined $100,000.
Because they sent into a job site?
According to this, failed as an employer to provide worker with information, instruction, or supervision
related
to
fall. Where did that money go?
Again, Manny, I'm the wrong person to ask for that.
So I'm just curious, where does that money go?
Is it collected?
Is it collected and is it given to the Crown to cover the expense of the trial?
I don't know.
Is it given to the victim who died?
Manny, there
25% surcharge.
There is
another, $50,000 plus another 30, yeah.
Only the Ministry of Labor can really track and follow this money and see if it was paid out and if it was collected, etc. Only the government can tell us if the government is doing what they're saying they're supposed to be doing. Right? Or they can prove it to people. But again, I think this is one area of our justice system that definitely needs some overlooking. Because there's a lot of deals that are getting or happening here. And then I think
two things should be $2.3 million.
I'm not laughing at that.
It should be $2.3 million each employer.
Well, it's one employer. One other one's a constructor.
But there's two parties involved here that were convicted, right?
Yep. Rolls uphill.
And the other thing was, I think moving forward, any prosecutor in the justice system here in Canada, you should have some sort of training on loss of life.
100%. Go experience it. Go, exactly. go hang out with exactly. the families.
Why don't you would be a lot less to
that's,
plead.
That's a good challenge, Manny. Every Ministry of Attorney General
prosecutor
that defends or not defense, that prosecutes on behalf of the Ministry of Labor, all of them should go do every year 50K run with Threads of Life. All of them.
And speak to the mothers, the daughters, the sisters, the brothers.
All of these
speak
lawyers.
To all of them.
Yeah. Because again, this is just a numbers game to them.
I know, and that's what
they have no vested interest.
But you can't do this. No. And to the argument of the court's time, that's bullshit. Start becoming more efficient and start figuring out.
Stop doing all your court from Zoom.
Yeah. So it's just like, I don't
get people back into jobs early.
Nobody ever talks about the person who lost their life and all the associated people around that person.
And keep in mind, so to this employer, the max fine they could have got for one charge was $2 million.
So they were given 100 and 130.
So what's 100?
So it would have been 2 million each.
The max fine per charge is $2 million.
So it would have been 2 million for both parties?
Depending on how many charges they pled guilty to.
But they only pled guilty to one.
There you go. So in this case, the fine was given, $100,000 fine to the employer of this deceased worker. But that could have been 2 million. That could have been the max fine.
So it should have been 2 million for each. Is all I'm saying.
So what is 100,000 of 2 million? 5%?
It's nothing.
So let me get this straight. An employer gets charged with 10 charges. Let's just say as an average, 10 charges. They plead guilty on one, right? So they're getting a 90% discount on the amount of charges that they get. So you get a 90% discount on the amount of charges. Then you only get fined $100,000 when the max fine is $2 million. So now you're getting a 95% discount on your fine.
Is that justice?
That sounds like a win for the employer.
That sounds like a win 100% for the employer.
Sure. And 95% and 90% discount? What's 100K, man? Didn't you say you went to last episode that you went to go look at some trucks and they were going for 100K? For an F-150?
More than 100K.
Right? Like, this is a joke, man.
And what I really don't like is that these two companies will continue working and this could happen again.
You'd like to hope not, you know. Have there been construction companies that have had fatalities and completely changed their mindset and their attitude towards safety?
Probably, for sure.
100%. Have there been construction companies that had one fatality and then next year had another fatality and then the year after that had another fatality and then the year after another?
It happens.
Yeah. I know a company like that and they're a core client. They're a core company. They're on the SOCI list of safe employers recognized by the Ministry of Labor. They've had multiple fatalities in the last few years.
How can they be accredited with that if they've had multiple fatalities?
That's a good question. Apparently, even though you have a fatality, you cannot get kicked off the SOCI list.
That makes no sense.
You can get kicked off of the WSIB receiving money list because it says right there on their website. But whether they've actually done that, I don't know. But apparently you can have multiple fatalities and still be considered part of the SOCI program of safe employers in this province.
I'm sorry, but that's not right.
Of course it's not right. That makes absolutely no sense. You have a bunch of dead workers, but you're still considered safe by the government.
It goes back to my black point, man.
Right? I don't know, man. What kind of upside down shit is this?
That's disappointing. And I think the fines are too little. And
anyways. $230K split between two multi-million dollar companies.
Where was this?
Location. Burlington. Oh, wait. That's where they're from. Location, workplace. Hamilton. Location of this project. And there you have it, Manny. Another case, another fatality.
No and justice.
100K for one
that's
worker?
That's not justice. Not. I'm sorry. It's not. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, but
disagree with it. You know, disagree with, start your own show. I don't give a fuck.
Well, hey, listen, it is what it is. Maybe we'll have a lawyer on that can come and explain some of this stuff. Maybe we should write an email to the Minister of Labor and ask them how a company that's on the SOCI, and it's not these companies, but how a company that's had multiple fatalities still stays on SOCI.
That's a good question. That's a great question.
I think these are all good questions. But again, a lot of the questions and a lot of things that we discuss and have questions to, I guess.
Maybe we should have CORE. Maybe we should have SOCI on here.
You know what? I would love to have the Minister of Labor on this show.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
No, because they're going to control the questions, right? But
there's
again,
not enough room in the studio for the lawyers.
They'll be standing outside nodding their head, prodding yes or no.
Yes, you. No, don't say that. Nope, don't answer that question. No.
No, but listen, in all due reality, even the Minister of Labor, and I've worked long enough that I've seen at least 10 or 15 different Minister of Labors. They're just the figurehead. That's all it is. It's really the Assistant Deputy Minister and the bureaucrats that run the Ministry of Labor and all these other government branches. The minister is just the politician.
I got another one.
Shoot.
You know how you enter the city limits and you see the sign of the population?
Yeah.
Right underneath that number, there should be the number of how many corrupt officials are running this country, this city.
I don't know which number would be bigger.
That's what I might. Population 2.something, corruption population.
You know what's sad, 3.
Something.
We joke about corruption, but we really mean what we're saying.
No, I'm not joking about it. No, it's true, 100%.
But you know, we look down south to our neighbors and Doge and how much corruption and bullshit that they're finding, and I'm salivating waiting for the day that happens here in Ontario.
It will.
Manny, how
Canada is a utopia, buddy.
Of what?
Canada's a to ignorant get away people? With everything.
I don't know, man.
Become a politician and you get away with everything.
I think that was the mentality down in the States for a long time, but now it isn't. And I think it's going to be really hard for Canadians to sit here and look at our neighbors and see how much corruption and waste that they're finding and not sit here and turn around and say, hey, Canadian politicians, do you mind if we do something like this so we can just double check?
They'll just say exactly what they're saying right now. That's happening in America. That doesn't happen here in Canada.
I don't know. Did you see Elon wants to live stream going to Fort Knox and see if the gold's there?
That's America.
Man, if Elon
the gold's not there, first of all,
if Elon live streamed that and goes in to take a look to see if the gold's there,
it'll be
and
a live stream there, assassination. That's what it will be.
Cow, what a, anyways.
All right. Anything else? No, that's it.
No. I got to get a new one.
I got to get videos that I don't want to see over and over again.
I got to get a new bingo card for 2025. I'm down huge. Can't predict any of this shit, man.
I'm telling you, maybe I should just Photoshop that sign in the city limits.
And put it on?
Yeah, put it on. Corrupt officials, population.
Jeez, what are you going to do when you get to the sign in Ottawa?
That number is going to, you're going to have to add a sign.
It might have to be.
You have to extend
extra
it.
Signs. Makes sense. Anyways.
That's it. We're out of here.
You're listening to Safety Corner, powered by TCL and S1. For workers, by workers. Online and in-person health and safety programs and training available in 10-plus languages. Reach out to them at www.mys1.ca and DM them at my_S1 for more information.